Hi, I'm WTOP Entertainment Editor Jason Fraley, and we are here with Kevin Blackistone, who is co-directing the new documentary, Imagining the Indian. Hey, Kevin, thanks so much for joining us.
No problem.
We just got off the phone with Aviva Kempner, who you know everyone knows from the Hank Greenberg documentary, and she's made films for years. You're co-directing it with her, and who's the person?
And who's the, I'm sorry?
Isn't there two other co-directors, too?
Yeah, we got Ben West as a co-director, who is the son of W. Richard West, who's one of the founders of the American Indian Museum here in D.C. and now runs the Archer Museum of the West out on the West Coast. And also Sam Bardley, who's also a D.C. native like Ben and me. Sam, his claim to fame working in documentary film in the D.C. area would be the Lynn Bias 30 for 30 doc that I'm sure most people are familiar with via ESPN.
Absolutely. And let's kick it off. Why was this sort of the right time for this documentary? It seems like, the death of George Floyd erupted into the Black Lives Matter movement.
Right.
We had Commissioner Goodell, pretty much do a 180 on the Colin Kaepernick situation. You had, Dan Snyder take down the George Preston Marshall thing. They retire Bobby Mitchell's number. I mean, it feels like a little bit of a wave. So why are you guys trying to capitalize on the current climate as, a timing for this thing?
Well, I started working on this back in 2014 when it looked like the nickname was at a precipice due to another trademark ruling against the franchise. And then there was a case that went up to the Supreme Court involving the rock group The Slants, and that kind of stopped some of the momentum. But I still knew the momentum was there, and I continued to work on this project. And Aviva became interested, and she said that she wanted to work on it as soon as her documentary on Mo Berg was finished. And that's been done a little over a year ago, I guess, and we've been plowing full steam ahead, basically to document the momentum in this movement and to explain why it is so important. Of course, no one could foresee what would happen in the past 6 weeks or so in the wake of George Floyd's murder to see the uprising of the Black Lives Matters movement in a way that really connects to what this film is all about. If you talk about systemic racism in America, you really have to start with the arrival of the Europeans in the 15th century on these shores and the quick and systematic genocide committed against Native American people. And so you see that coming together in the past few weeks with people attacking images of the Confederacy as well as images of Christopher Columbus, which obviously links back to the 15th century when he arrived on these shores in 1492 and shortly thereafter Native Americans found themselves under attack.
Yeah, you've even seen NASCAR ban the Confederate flag. You've seen country music artists change their names. It's been a wild few weeks here. Where do you have a personal journey with this? I mean, I remember going back to RFK Stadium with my grandfather watching those back in like the early 90s when they were doing their final Super Bowl run. But didn't you cover you said you first started noticing the protests when you're covering the Super Bowl in Minneapolis?
Yeah, well, I have a long connection. I mean, I'm a Washingtonian. I grew up in a family that had season tickets. My father grew up in Leroy Park in the shadow of Griffith Stadium. He was a season ticket holder with his friends back in the 1950s. And by the time the 50s were coming to an end, and George Preston Marshall, the founder of the franchise and the owner of the team at that time, was refusing to integrate his team. And they were the last all-white team in the NFL. and also the Southernmost team, which had a lot to do with why George Fetzer Marshall did what he did. And so my father and a handful of friends, handful of his black buddies, they started boycotting the games and going to watch NFL games in Baltimore until the team integrated. And, of course, the team finally integrated in 1962 under threat of bayonet from the federal government by bringing Bobby Mitchell here. But the team was still not free of its Confederate embrace, and they used to play the song Dixie all the time to start home games. My father complained to the franchise about that via a letter to Edward Bennett Williams, who at the time was the acting president of the team, because George Preston Marshall had become incapacitated with age, and Edward Bennett Williams agreed with my father and said that they would no longer play Dixie. So I have a long connection with this team, but I never thought about that and the nickname of the team until 1992, when I was at the Super Bowl and I actually witnessed a protest outside the outside of the Metrodome in Minneapolis before the Washington-Buffalo Super Bowl. And that was the first time I ever thought about it. And years later, I thought about it more and more, particularly after I wrote a column about an NAACP protest in Midland, Texas, against the name Midland Lee High School that a lot of black kids were playing for. And, you know, it was named after Robert E. Lee. They wore the Confederate gray kind of uniforms. They drenched themselves in other Confederate imagery, you know, with a mascot named Reb, I believe, and all that kind of thing. And that's when I began to think. I said, well, if I am upset as the progeny of enslaved Africans with this imagery that these black kids are playing for at Midland Lee High School, now I understand what it was I saw on a street corner in Minneapolis in 1992. And I began to make the connection, and that's when I really started to think about, you know what, this name needs to go. And I stopped using it. I've almost successfully stopped saying it, even though I grew up with it. It was like oxygen around here, as you know. And I've been working on this documentary since 2014, trying to tell the tale of why this is so important.
Now, does the documentary argue for the, you know, getting rid of, you know, names like Braves, Chiefs, Seminoles, or is it in Cleveland Indians, Chief Wahoo? We saw them get rid of that.
Right.
Or is it more so because there's the name, you know, Red and Skin literally in the title? Is the Redskins like a special case, or are you also advocating for, you know, Brave Chiefs and the like to get rid of?
No, we're advocating for the erasure of all of those names, all of those nicknames, all of those mascots, all of that imagery. But it just happens to be that, you know, we're right here in the nation's capital. I have a tie to this team. Ben has a tie to this team. Sam has a tie to this team. This is one of the most profitable sports franchises on the planet, in the, you know, the biggest sports business in this country. You know, the NFL is worth anywhere between $15 and $19 billion. This is the big domino. This is the big domino. So while we do talk about other teams and other nicknames, this is the crown jewel of kind of racist symbolism by using Native Americans in sports.
Yeah, and as you know, you mentioned all your local ties. You know full well, just as I do, that it's not simply a matter of changing the team name. I feel like a lot of, let's say, proponents of keeping the name, or maybe just longtime fans who are so ingrained, one of their big hurdles is not only is it the name, it's the fight song.
Sure. But the fight song has changed. That's what people have to remember.
Right. Educate us on that.
Yeah. I mean, I just pointed out that Dixie was a part of Game Day Sundays at RFK DC Stadium, right? They removed that. They used to have cheerleaders dressed like Indian girls. They got rid of that. The fight song used to say "Fight for Old Dixie," D-I-X-I-E, right? Which is Confederate imagery. They changed that to "Fight for Old DC." So change can be made, and those changes have been made over the years. And those changes that have been made over the years have been to be inclusive of fans, to be inclusive of players and coaches and executives associated with the team. And there is no evidence here locally or nationally when teams have changed those sorts of nicknames where the fan base has turned away. They embrace the new name. Right, they embrace their new identity, and you feel better about it.
Yeah, so you're saying you could the fight song has already been changed once. You could even, if you really wanted, keep the melody and change the lyrics or whatever. You're saying there is precedent there.
Absolutely.
And then there's also, I mean, I think he just passed away, but we remember, you know, Chief Z, the guy that would dress up and say, "Crank up that diesel." There's almost like a. Similar to watch, there's that Western mythology of we're going to watch the Cowboys and Skins, Cowboys and Indians on Thanksgiving. You know, there's a lot to sort of, I guess, unpack. But, I guess what would you say to maybe like as a make that olive branch pitch, I guess, to people that have those positive memories of Joe Gibbs and the Hogs and, you know what I mean? Like, and
sure.
they can hear the fight song in their head. You know, what's that olive branch pitch there?
Well, I don't think, but you know what? There isn't an olive branch. This is just about doing the right thing.
Right.
This is about not hurting a people, continuing to hurt a people. And sometimes we just have to step up and do that. And I think that's what you're seeing right now with the Black Lives Matter protests against Confederate monuments and against the Confederate flag. It's really about doing the right thing. And, you know, particularly in a city that I grew up in where, you know, our reputation became known under the moniker of Chocolate City because it's a predominantly black city, run by a predominantly black governing body. You know, we should be, black people in this city, black people who are fans of this team, should be sensitive to this issue, just as Dan Snyder, who is Jewish, should be sensitive to this issue. You know, we as black people get upset sometimes when we see that people are appropriating our culture or for some other reason. Well, if we're a fan of this team and we wear this nickname and we wear these feathers, we are appropriating the culture of someone else for our selfish desires. And that's something that we need to reckon with as well.
Gotcha. Yeah, I mean, I totally get your point. I guess olive branch isn't the right way to word it. I guess I'm saying is how do you convince people that, you know, that they're not throwing away their great memories of watching Joe Gibbs with their dad. It's just evolving. They keep those memories of the team, you know, the fun times, but we're moving
right.
to a new era, I guess is what I'm saying.
Yeah, well, I mean, I think that's, you know, we're in a new, we're in a new century now. We're in the 21st century. Things have changed significantly. We're in 2020, a period of cleansing a lot of these sins. We should be, we should embrace that. And as part of embracing that, we should embrace some change with this particular team that we've come to love for whatever reasons over the years. I think that that's a I think that's a good thing. We should basically catch up with the times. We should get on the right side of history. Because I tell you what, sooner or later, sooner more than later, you wind up being the lone blemish when it comes to the sports world.
Right.
If NASCAR can shed itself of the Confederate flag, if the state of Mississippi, which we always come to think of as being, you know, this last bastion, this bulwark of white supremacy in this country, can move to remove the Confederate flag finally from its state flag, right, the last state flag to have that imagery on it, and then yet this team in this city, an international city, the seat of the nation's capital, can continue to have this as an image, that's problematic. That's not a good look.
Yeah, yeah, and you're right. Mississippi was the last one. And, I mean, South Carolina, I remember after the horrific Charleston shooting, I think, remember, they took the flag down from the state capitol. But, yeah, Mississippi now finally, quote, doing the right thing now, too. So, yeah, you're right. Is the team going to be the last thing? Well, so how does the documentary address? Because I'm going to devil's advocate for a second.
Mm-hmm.
You know what the team's going to say, right? Is that they're going to quote the 2004 Annenberg poll, the Washington Post poll,
sure,
in 2012 that said 90% aren't offended. How does the documentary address that? Do you guys cite other polls, or I feel like you have to address those polls in the movie.
Sure, you can address the polls. On the one hand, I would say that polling for morality is not a great thing to do.
Right.
On the other hand, I could say that if you're into polls, like for every poll that you can find where it leaned one way, you can find it done by some other people and it leaned another way. So those can be, those can be addressed, and people's feelings, their sensibilities change over time. We know that by looking at legislation that works its way through Congress, laws that get changed from time to time, decisions that are made by the Supreme Court. There's no question that people's thoughts and ideas change about things. I mean, they're changing right now about Confederate monuments. So they definitely change. So I'm not, we will certainly address the polling issue, because that there's no doubt that in particular the Washington Post poll of a few years ago took a lot of wind out of people's sails. But the fact of the matter is the polls are not tracking the momentum. Despite the polls, more and more schools each and every year remove this imagery and remove such nicknames from their teams. It's just a matter of fact. And so if, this particular team is the last one, it seems, to have its heels really dug in for whatever reasons.
Gotcha. Do you have any idea of, which tribes are interviewed in the documentary? Who are some of the voices that are, advocating for the name change in the movie itself?
Well, Yocha Dehi is executive producer of our film. They gave us a very generous seed grant in our fundraising, and so we have talked to a number of people from that particular tribe, but Ben West, who was the co-director and went to Sidwell Fins and grew up here in D.C., he's Cheyenne. His father is Southern Cheyenne. Suzanne Harjo, who is a civil rights icon, who has fought this fight since she arrived in D.C. in the early 1970s. She represents, or not represents, but she's a member of several tribes. So You know, there are any number of people who we've talked to who are from one tribe or another who have been and continue to be very concerned about this issue.
For sure. So do you have, I mean, what then do you have ideas of what the team might change the name to? I mean, we've seen the you know, Bullets change to Wizards. The Senators left and came back as the Nets. So we have some history in the city of different names.
Right.
But I guess a few years ago, the conventional wisdom was, oh, Dan Snyder's trying to buy the trademark for Warriors. But you're saying that doesn't, even that doesn't go far enough because it's still the, you know, they would keep the image of the Native American. Do you have any ideas of what it would go to?
I mean, my concern isn't what it would go to. My concern is what it won't be. Right. So, you know, you can pick all sorts of names, but just don't pick a people. Don't dehumanize a people into mascots. Don't misappropriate their culture. Don't continue to misrepresent them in history. Or what they will be in the future. So I really don't have a thought about what the name can be in the future. I just have a thought about what it shouldn't be, and it shouldn't be this.
Right. That's a good way of looking at it. I did when you know, Joe Bugle just passed away, the engineer of the Hogs. You know, you had the fans wearing the hog noses. You could call them the Pigskins, double meaning, football and the Hogs.
Yeah, you could come up with something. I guess, that would be better than anything else. I'm sure they can, that's something else, though, that the city could wrap itself around. You know, you could have a poll like A. Poland supposedly had to find a new name for the, for the Bullets. Get the entire community involved in it. It could be something fun, but it just doesn't have to be this.
Now, and you've been really generous with your time, so we won't keep you much longer. But sort of, you know, in netted out in closing, where do you see this? I know the documentary. You're not even done with it yet, because you're going to try to film throughout the fall if there's protests or any developments or the like. But What do you see happening? Do you think this is something that is going to come, from Dan Snyder himself, or do you think it's going to be, a Roger Goodell coming down from on high, similar to the Kaepernick, 180? Do you think the league's going to pressure, or do you think there's a chance that the name stays for a lot longer for some reason? Where do you see it going?
Well, what we know of Dan Snyder so far, and I've had only a very, very brief conversation with him about this when he came to the University of Maryland as part of the symposium. He has been steadfast. He's made it very clear that, he won't make this change. I mean, he sounded like George Wallace in the schoolhouse door. Never. You're going to put it in caps. So I'm not expecting him to do this on his own. So where could it come from? It could come from the other 31 owners who find this to be onerous at this point and no longer want to be a part of it. And they can make that very clear to, Roger Goodell, who was pushed into a corner in order to say Black Lives Matter and to say that the league erred in its treatment of black players who protested police lethality with the national anthem as a backdrop. Or it could come from players. We like to celebrate. We're in a period right now of celebrating athletes, particularly black athletes, for being politically active, politically aware, and wanting to make change and being involved in social justice. And I don't want to put the onus on them, but they do make up over two-thirds of the rosters in this league. And I would think that if tomorrow they came out and said we're not going to play anymore in this league, or certainly for that team, as long as it has that name, the change would come forth pretty quickly. So those are the places where, you know, I could see it coming from. You know, the fan base, you know, they can always vote by not buying season tickets, and they slowly but surely not been doing that.
They already are, man. That place
in the last few years,
right?
But for totally different reasons, right?
Right. That's product on the field. They've been terrible for three decades, but
exactly. So I see it coming from, you know, the pressure is going to have to come from from the outside. I don't think it's going to come from within.
Well, thanks for your time. You know, as we both said, we both have had, you know, we've been rooting. We rooted for the team long ago, and you've covered the team for a long time. And so I know it's very touchy. You know, I'm sure you, like me, have family, friends, colleagues on both sides of it that want to see it. I've heard people say change it. Some people say no. It's a really touchy issue. So I thank you guys for taking it on. And again, it's called Imagining the Indian. Hopefully, and Aviva said it's hoping to hit Sundance in January. We'll see, you know, hopefully we look forward to seeing it. But in the meantime, thanks for all your work.
No problem. Thank you.